From 2RPH Sydney and through the RPH network, this is AbleQuest, the program that looks at assistive technologies. This time we focus on occupational therapy. Occupational therapy is a profession that focuses on and gives priority to enabling people's full participation and meaning in life. It assists people to achieve their goals by focusing on the strengths of the individual or the community, not their restrictions or barriers. Dr. Annie McCluskey is an occupational therapist and a health services researcher. She is currently a senior lecturer at the University of Sydney. Since 2011, Dr. McCluskey has received $2 million in funding and published over 40 peer-reviewed articles with co-investigators, including three randomized controlled trials. Studies have been published in high-impact journals such as Stroke, Implementation Science, Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, and BMC Health Science Research. Dr. McCluskey's area of research and teachings are stroke rehabilitation, evidence-based practice, including teaching students and graduates how to do and provide research-informed practice, helping clients and patients to seek and get evidence-based rehabilitation, and handwriting rehabilitation for adults. In this program, Dr. McCluskey talks to Nikki Lindemann about the subject with particular emphasis on stroke recovery.
Let's start, if you don't mind, with a quick sort of definition of what occupational therapy actually is for our listeners, because some may not be aware.
Well, we're mainly interested in helping people to participate in the community, to participate when they're in hospital as well, and manage the sort of daily activities and roles that are important to them. So when somebody's in hospital, the kind of roles that are important is getting to the bathroom, getting in and out of bed, eating. Or when they go home, it might be coming to the radio station, for example, to do some work, going to the shops, making a cup of tea, driving a car.
Mobility. So,
depends what's important for the person. For a lot of people, it's social participation, being able to talk and use the telephone. So we're interested in helping the person to adapt, perhaps, the way they do a task, and adapt the environment. We might introduce some technology. Yeah, looking at the way the person manages their roles and activities.
That's wonderful. So it's definitely no longer basket weaving and so forth, as it used to perhaps be.
Well, there's a separate discipline, diversional therapy, which people will find in many of the hospitals and certainly in aged care facilities and hostels and nursing homes, who have an interest in leisure activities. So often a diversional therapist will focus more on leisure activities. But certainly that could be important for people. We might help people adapt the activity.
Indeed. Can you describe perhaps some of the technologies most commonly used in your profession, and what kind of impairments are they actually designed to assist with?
Well, broadly, it depends if we're working with children or with older people or people who've had a stroke, which we're going to talk a little bit more about today. There's lots of technology that's universally available that we now use in rehabilitation and to help people, like smartphones and tablets and laptops. So they're used, obviously, in schools a lot more for children, but they can be used for people who have memory problems to prompt them, you know, so they can have an alarm that's set to remind them to phone somebody or to do an activity or to take the washing out. So that's helpful to have things that are, the cost is coming down a lot more for people to be able to use them if they've had a brain injury or some other disability. In rehabilitation, I work with people who've had a stroke, and in hospitals now we're using video games and technology, like there's lots of games that adults will use quite commonly on the computer, and we're using them to try and help people practice more with using their arm or to help them with their balance in rehabilitation. And these things can be set up with people at home as well.
Robotics?
Robotics for arm and hand rehabilitation and for mobility is, while the research has shown that these kind of technologies can help people, it's not routinely available yet in most of the rehabilitation centres. It's just too expensive. And in fact, a lot of the rehabilitation interventions that we use don't cost a lot of money in terms of equipment. So we can talk a little bit more about them. But a lot of the robotics for hand and arm rehabilitation, for example, still haven't moved much beyond the laboratory situation.
Mm-hmm. So now, I believe it was National Stroke Week last week, was it? Is there any special message perhaps you'd like to get out there? today?
Thank you for asking about that. Yes, it was National Stroke Week last week. And the major campaign this year is called Fight Stroke. There's a website called www.fightstroke.com.au, and we're trying to encourage 10,000 people to register their interest in raising awareness of stroke and the need to educate people about the impact of stroke, which is a serial killer that's being depicted in the adverts that your listeners may have seen on television as a serial killer, which affects so many people. 1 in 6 person will have a stroke during their lifetime, and it's not just older people.
You're referring here to the rather terrifying ad where the chap smashes the brain.
That's correct. The advert was intended to be provocative, to get people talking about stroke. So we hope that people do remember it and do talk about it. But as I said, it does affect 1 in 6 people, and people can not only have one stroke, but sometimes a subsequent stroke. So we want people to recognise when somebody's having a stroke. We know that most people don't recognise when they're having a stroke, or somebody in their community or their house is having a stroke. So we're trying to get people to recognise when there's a problem with somebody's face, a weakness. That's the F. We talk about the FAST acronym, F-A-S-T, where there's a facial weakness, an arm weakness, a speech problem, and then time becomes of the essence to get somebody to urgent medical attention. And the quicker somebody gets to seek medical attention, the more likely they are to be able to get some intervention, some medical treatment to possibly minimise disability.
Do you want to take a moment here to just go through the FAST acronym?
I'll go through it again. So some people may have seen fridge magnets, but F stands for facial weakness. Somebody may have a weakness or a drooping of one side of their face, which is a sign of a stroke. Their arm might be weak, or they might have tingling in their arm. That's the A. Another sign and symptom of stroke. Their speech might be affected, so they could have word-finding difficulties or slurred speech. And the T is time. Time is brain, is the way we like to think of it. So FAST means your face, your arm, your speech could all be affected. Go and see a doctor, get to the hospital quickly.
So how does occupational therapy help rehabilitate stroke survivors? What could a person expect after consulting an occupational therapist?
If we start with the hospital situation, so somebody who's had a major stroke affecting their ability to stand up, their ability to use their hand, we probably start with looking at getting in and out of bed, how they manage with showering and dressing and what their normal grooming activities are. Look at ways we can help to rehabilitate their arm, make their arm stronger, and perhaps somebody might not even be able to move their arm. So we might start with some exercises in conjunction with the physiotherapist for their arm and their hand. And we would look at what other roles and activities the person wants to do to go home. So it might be cooking, they might make their breakfast in the hospital, they might learn to use some gadgets. So we'll often trial some of the equipment in the shower and in the kitchen. And we do a home visit. Most people would, if they have a significant change in their performance, they'll have a home visit. And we'll go out with the person and their family, look at their steps, look at their access, can they get out to the garden. And then we'll look at the activities they want to do when they go home. You're not allowed to drive for a month after you've had a stroke. That's a national regulation. But after that, some people might want advice about how to have a driving assessment if they need to adapt how they drive. I'm doing some research looking at helping therapists to get people out and about more. There tends to be a lot of therapy happens in the hospital or outpatient department. People need to build their confidence up and get back on buses, crossing roads, managing to carry things if they only use one hand.
Could you describe, Annie, for us, what is evidence-based rehabilitation?
Evidence-based rehabilitation is probably more simply understood as research-informed practice. So as much as possible, all health professions try to deliver interventions, treatments that are based on research. And there's a lot of things that we do in rehabilitation and in healthcare that doesn't have much research. And it's just important that we know what we're doing and whether it's based on research or not. So there's a lot of research around hand and arm rehabilitation, what therapies can make a difference. We know, for example, that using a mirror box can make a difference to getting messages from people's brain to their hand.
Can you describe a mirror box?
Yes, it's a box that has a mirror on one side, and the person looks into the mirror with their paralyzed or their weak arm in the box, and they're looking at their other arm moving, doing some exercises, and they're trying to trick their brain into thinking that's their affected arm.
Wow.
And there are two trials that have shown people who do that 5 days a week for half an hour a day get better arm recovery than people who don't use the mirror box. So we're trying to drive neuroplasticity by doing things like that. So we're trying to make sure that people with stroke and their families have access to that kind of information. And the National Stroke Foundation have guidelines that are on the web, and people can find on the National Stroke Foundation website, that list the sorts of therapies they should expect to receive that are based on research and other things that will be often done or suggested but may not be based on research at this stage. Many medical treatments are not based on research, but at least we know what is and isn't based on research.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what type of rehabilitation do you prefer to recommend to your patients and why?
Well, I guess evidence-based as much as mm-hmm. possible, but we know that often people will seek out other therapies, particularly after they leave hospital. Most people in Australia will have maybe a month in hospital. Then they might have a period of 6 or 8 weeks of outpatient follow-up therapy. But rehabilitation goes on for many years. Recovery goes on for many years. So often people will be seeking out their own other therapies. They'll get advice from other people with stroke. They might seek acupuncture and other therapies like that.
So there isn't necessarily a point beyond which rehabilitation or recovery doesn't move. I mean, you could potentially expect it to go on improving.
Oh, yes. 5 years, 10 years. For many people that I see, their recovery is ongoing and they're always working on either their talking or their ability to get back out into the community. Some people have, many people will set goals for the year, so they might want to get back on a horse again if they're a horse rider. They might want to go on their first holiday, and so there's certain small goals along the way that they have to work towards. So that's called sort of self-management is the proper term for that, where you're setting goals and working towards managing your life, knowing that you have a long-term illness or a long-term condition. You're setting goals and working towards them. It might be return to work or driving or a holiday.
And an occupational therapist could advise you how to get that sort of happening and what would help you set some realistic goals. Is that correct?
Yeah. Realistic depends on the person's perspective. I think we can sometimes be a bit limiting in what we think is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've worked and seen people 10 years after their stroke, and you can often be very surprised at the achievement somebody's made. Mm. So I think if somebody has a goal, that's still their goal and it's their expectation that they'll work towards that. And we can help people work towards it in small ways. It might be equipment, it might be adapting the activity.
Mm-hmm. To end the interview, Annie, I think we really need to talk about a little bit of a stroke prevention, a health message perhaps. What would you like to convey to our listeners?
Part of the education is about not only recognising when a stroke's happening, but also what sort of prevention and healthy lifestyle habits people need to acquire. And I don't think in rehabilitation we do that particularly well, but I think all the people who come into contact with a person with stroke and their family and friends can think about, how can I assist this person to get some exercise? So if you can't walk very fast, walking's hard, but there are other ways of getting exercise. The food that people eat's important, so getting a healthy diet, changing the salt intake, the fat intake, all those sorts of things are important. That self-management that I talked about, having goals that people are working towards and ways to spend their time that are satisfying. So the healthy lifestyle that's important for everybody is even more important when you've had a cardiovascular disease. So exercise, diet.
And a healthy attitude. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Annie McCluskey. And we look forward to having you on 2RPH again sometime.
Thank you, Nikki.
That was Dr. Annie McCluskey talking to Nikki Lindemann about occupational therapy. Join us again next time on the RPH Network for more from AbleQuest.